अधिलोकनाथो लोकान अलोकान सह लोकपालान अचिक्लपाद्यत्र हि सर्वसत्त्वा निकाय भेदो अधिकृत प्रतीतः यै बाय होम तत्व ट्रूथ भेदय बाय डिफरेंशिएशन अधिलोकनाथः द किंग ऑफ द किंग्स लोकान प्लैनेट्स अलोकान प्लैनेट्स ऑफ द लोअर रीजन सह अलोंग विथ लोकपालान रेस्पेक्टिव किंग्स अचिकिल्पत् प्लैंड यत्र वेर इन He certainly serva all sattva existence nikaya living entities bhedaha difference adikrita occupied pratitaha it so appears. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The supreme king of all kings, the supreme king of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work, and he has created their different kings and rulers. The supreme king of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work, and he has created their different kings and rulers. Purport. Lord Krishna is the chief king of all kings, and he has created different planets for all kinds of living entities. Even on this planet, there are different places for inhabitation by different types of men. There are places like deserts, islands, icelands, and valleys in mountainous countries, and in each of them, there are different kinds of men born of different modes of nature according to their past deeds. There are people in the Arabian deserts and in the valleys of the Himalayan mountains, and the inhabitants of these two places differ from one another just as the inhabitants of the Icelands also differ from them. Similarly, there are also different planets. The planets below the earth down to the Patala planet are full of various kinds of living beings. No planet is vacant. No planet is vacant, as wrongly imagined by the modern so-called scientist. In Bhagavad Gita, we find it said by the Lord that the living entities are sarvagata, or present in every sphere of life. So there is no doubt that on other planets there are also inhabitants like us, sometimes with greater intelligence and greater opulence. The living conditions for those of greater intelligence are more luxurious than on this earth. There are also planets where no sunlight reaches, and there are living entities who must live there due to their past deeds. such plans for living conditions are made by the Supreme Lord. And Vidura requested Maitreya to describe this for the sake of further enlightenment. I had such a passionate week this week. I'm finding it difficult to focus on Bhagavad. It's a terrible week. Pardon. So please pardon me for any lapses today. I'm trying to concentrate on this subject matter. Okay. So, we are in Canto 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 5. Which is called as Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, and we are in text 8. The Supreme King of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work, and he has created different kings and rulers. So before we delve into this topic for today, let a quick background of what is happening in the Srimad Bhagavatam at this point in time and what circumstance has led to this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura, having been insulted by Duryodhan, has left the palace and he is on pilgrimage. In course of his pilgrimage, he has met Uddhava, who is among the greatest devotees and intimate associates of Lord Krishna. Uddhava and Vidura have had a pretty intense conversation. They have exchanged notes. Vidura has got a lot of spiritual enlightenment from Uddhava. Besides the fact that Uddhava has also given him vital information on Lord Krishna's instructions before the Lord wound up his pastimes in this material world. So that conversational thread between Uddhava and Vidura had been running for quite some time. Now that conversational thread is paving way for another conversational thread which will also go on for quite some time. But this time, it is between Vidura and Maitreya Muni. Vidura asked Uddhava to instruct him in devotional service. Uddhava, out of his humility and great respect for Maitreya Muni, tells Vidura that in the presence of a higher authority, I cannot speak on this subject. It will be maryada vyatikrama. It will be superseding a higher authority. So, Uddhava directs Vidura to Maitreya Muni. So, Vidura has now left Uddhava's association. Uddhava has proceeded towards Badrikashram as was the will of the Lord. And Vidura is crying very loudly in separation from the Lord, and also out of gratitude that the Lord remembered Vidura before he wound up his pastimes. And after Uddhava departs, Vidura starts walking from Yamuna all the way to now another holy river, which is Ganga in Haridwar. And there he meets the great sage Maitreya Muni. Now, as soon as Vidura meets Maitreya Muni, he asks Maitreya Muni, "Kindly tell me how one should live to attain real happiness." It's a very good question he's asking. How one should live to attain real happiness? How should one understand the subject matter and perform thereafter devotional service? Two questions he asks. And the third question he's asking is, as part of this whole Leela of the Lord, what are the different incarnations that the Lord has appeared in? Because he has been hearing that the Lord has appeared and created and is maintaining this entire cosmic manifestation. So he wants to know more about the Lord and this cosmic manifestation, this material world. And in that context, today's verse comes. So where the discussion is on different planetary systems. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, which we read just now, talks about the existence of extraterrestrial life. Life beyond the realms of what we know is in this planet. Srila Prabhupada mentions that based on one's desire and merits, then one begets either a higher planet or lower planet. Not merits, but demerits for lower planets. So, Srila Prabhupada clearly explains here that there are planetary systems and there is intelligent life outside Earth planet. Karmana Deva Netrena Jantur Deha Upapatte Sriya Pravishta Udaram Pumsa Reta Kanashraya. How does a living entity get into the womb of some woman in some planetary system, in some universe? It happens because of one's karma. Under the Daiva Netrena, under the jurisdiction of the demigods, the higher authorities. Now, this is the view of the scriptures, that there is life outside this earth. However, what is the general world view? I have taken some notes based on a very interesting and exciting class that was given by His Holiness Devamrit Swami. So, part of what I am going to speak is from what Maharaj has spoken. So Maharaj was mentioning in that lecture that the mainstream propaganda today is that life does not exist outside of Earth. And everyone is pretty trying to get convinced about it. And scientists are also trying to convince everyone. Some scientists, not all. However, from the point of view of yoga, the issue of extraterrestrial is virtually a non-issue. For example, when we start reading that Indra did this or Varuna did this, there is something naturally where we read it with faith. But when we go and tell someone outside there is a higher planetary system where there is Indra, then they will start thinking, this guy is crazy or something like that. What Indra? What higher planets? So people cannot relate to it. But as devotees, we easily relate to it. Because bhakti started with shraddha, with faith. Because of shraddha, we came in touch with sadhu sangha. And then we started performing bhajana kriya. Anartha nivritti started happening slowly. Some nishtha is there, some is not there. Right? So most of us, many devotees are struggling with anartha nivritti. But in this struggle, one thing is happening, that our shraddha is going up. Our faith is going up and up. When we were doing our Bhakti Vaibhav degree course under His Grace Keshav Prabhu, and we had finished fourth canto, and Keshav Prabhu told us, next year all your faith is going to be tested. Let us see how many people stay in the course and how many drop out of the course after fifth canto. Why? Because canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, in fact I found it the most difficult section of Srimad Bhagavatam. You really have to go through it. It kind of tests your faith. Because it talks about extraterrestrial life. And if one can go through it with faith, then one is nicely poised then to go into the next sections of Bhagavatam, culminating in the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Canto 10. But one has to go through this journey. So, why this skepticism is there is because there is this intense propaganda that there is no life outside of earth. However, in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada also quotes here in this purport, it is mentioned very clearly that the nature of Jiva is Sarvagata. Sarvagata means existing everywhere. So there is nowhere, there no place where there are no living entities. It's a different issue that we may not be able to see. That's a completely different issue. But it doesn't mean that what I can't see does not exist. I can't see the sunlight now. Doesn't mean sun doesn't exist simply because I'm sitting in this room. Also, there is a misconception that not only that life is only available on earth, but human beings are the most intelligent species. That's another big misconception. Yes, no doubt that in the science of self-realization, Srila Prabhupada says that human beings have higher intelligence and that intelligence should be used for discrimination and to get out of the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. But it is too much to say that we are the most intelligent living species in this planet. We are kind of giving ourselves a self-certification in one sense. And Devamrit Maharaj was saying in the class that the most dangerous species on earth, which is destroying the earth out of foolishness and greed and lust, is the human species. And then we call ourselves the most intelligent species on earth. So there is this paradox which we live with. And we are so adamant that we restrict our life and our thinking to niches which we are very familiar with. And we think whatever is our small world is the truth. And we put value systems, culture, everything around that, you know, around a little bit of truth that we know. And society is running that way. But Bhagavad Gita does not allow that. Maharaj was quoting something called as the rare earth hypothesis. It's too difficult or too esoteric for me. So I'll read out what is the, I checked out Google and found out Wikipedia. What is a rare earth hypothesis? It says, a rare earth hypothesis argues that the emergence of complex multicellular life on earth and subsequently intelligence requires an improbable combination of astrophysical and geological events and circumstances. How does that sound? Okay. So, in simple language, it says the existence of life requires a very specific combination of certain elements. The hypothesis argues that complex extraterrestrial life is a very improbable phenomenon and likely to be extremely rare. So they are safeguarding themselves. After all, if tomorrow they find out, they'll say, I just said it was likely, I didn't say it was a fact. So that their credibility is also intact. And if it actually happens, so then they'll say, look, I told you that it was rare. So the scientists will safeguard themselves from both sides. Whereas, Srimad Bhagavatam points out that jivas can exist in any material situation with appropriate bodies. That day I was watching a documentary on what is called as extremophiles. 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 These are life forms that can exist in the most extreme circumstances which material nature can give. So this man was going to some place, can't remember which place, but there was this big river or whatever, water body, and water was bubbling. It was said that the water is almost, is like near boiling point. And then he was picking, in a tube, he was putting it, and then he was taking out some creatures for his experiment, which were thriving even in that environment, at boiling point. And then the same gentleman then goes to Antarctica, and then he's going there again, he's picking up specimen which live in Antarctica, what is it, minus 58 degrees centigrade, that's what I heard, or probably more, goes sometimes to minus 70 also, I heard. Okay. So jivas can exist, you know, even in these circumstances. And then the scientists are concluding that because of extreme temperatures, or extreme temperatures on the higher side or the lower side, therefore life cannot exist outside of Earth, when life even within Earth is there in these temperatures, extremophiles. So the range of human perception is very limited, and we generally tend to disagree with things that do not fit into our own paradigms. That is our problem. For example, dogs can hear frequencies which we cannot hear. So there are things which are paranormal, which are beyond even our understanding and experience. And we are very quick to deny the existence of anything which is outside our familiarity, or something which cannot fit into our own models. Now, while this rare Earth hypothesis is also given, there is this famous scientist, Carl Sagan, and his wife, whose name was Andruyan. So there is a quote from Andruyan also. She talks something opposite to this rare Earth hypothesis. Both are atheists, but still they are opposing each other. One atheist is opposing another atheist with scientific explanation. So she says, she suggests an experiment. It makes sense in one sense, this experiment. She says, look back again at the pale blue dot. And what is she referring to? Any idea? What is a pale blue dot?
Earth.
Yes. Earth seen from far off. Look back again at the pale blue dot. Take a good long look at it. Stare at the dot for any length of time, and then try to convince yourself that God created the whole universe for one of the 10 million or so species of life that inhabit this tiny speck of dust. How does that sound? It's a pale blue dot. She's calling it as a dust. Actually, it is true. We are all living on a small piece of dust which is floating, you know, in the cosmos, called as Earth. And inside that, in a country, inside that, in a particular street. You know. Now, take it a step further, she says. Imagine that everything was made just for a single shade of that species or gender or ethnic or religious subdivision. If this doesn't strike you as unlikely, pick another dot. Imagine that dot to be inhabited by a different form of intelligent life. They too think God has created everything for their benefit. Okay. Another dot is thinking same way. How seriously do you take their claim? She's asking. So there is some merit in what she's saying. So that is another view. Now there is a third view, which another scientist is saying. This guy is Stephen Hawking. He stated last year that he's not denying their existence, but he's saying that we should be scared of them. Aliens are out there, but very dangerous for humans to interact with them. Now, I saw one movie many years back. I think it was called Independence Day. Have you seen? Anyone seen that movie?
Yeah.
It was about aliens attacking the Earth, and one scientist doing something. One guy finally saves the Earth. Always, somehow, aliens have these weird features. They are more ugly than earthly personality. And always Americans save the Earth. So I couldn't understand why. Why is it that Americans always save the Earth? From aliens. Okay. But they are not so generous in protecting other countries, you know, within Earth. So, difficult to understand this. So this guy, Stephen Hawking, he says that aliens are visiting this earth, and we have to be very careful. And it is almost similar to when Columbus, you know, visited the Native Americans, you know, where Columbus was the great, you know, scientist and thinker, and Native Americans were, you know, they didn't know anything, lower species. So he's thinking that these guys are lower species. That is one speculation. Another scientist is saying that they are higher species than us. So all kinds of speculation is going on in this world. Every scientist is disagreeing with everyone else. And the fear is there that whatever it may be, lower or higher, these guys will capture us and colonize us. Colonize or colonize? How do you say that? Colonization. Colonize us. So our life is happily, you know, we are nicely, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So these guys will come and spoil the fun. So that's the general feeling. Now, whatever the scientists may say and whatever extent of propaganda they may do, a survey which was taken recently, again in the great country, land of United States, revealed that most of the people believe that there is life on other planets. Most of the people believe that. Nobody is foolish enough to think that sitting on a tiny speck of dust, we can have the intelligence to conclude that there is no life, there is nothing outside of us. So people are usually, the norm, common man is not the frog in the well. Some intelligence is there. Right. Okay. Now let's take the Anglican bishop's view. In the United Kingdom, most of the bishops have admitted a possibility of intelligent life existing outside of Earth. Most of them have admitted. However, they are scared. They say that when such truth comes out, there may be a complete overhaul of Christian theology. So that is another concern that people are having. So different people have different concerns from their own viewpoints. However, scriptures talk differently. Scriptures give us this information. Of what is that extraterrestrial life that exists outside of Earth. Because we are, as I said before, because we are very busy, you know, in Ahara, Nidra, Bhaya and Maithunam, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, we are mostly indifferent. If you go and ask someone on the road, do you think extraterrestrial life exists? The first answer will be, how does it matter? I don't care. You know? Right now I'm going to work. You know? I've got sales targets, revenue targets. I'm very busy. So don't ask me such questions. I don't care. Mostly, most people are indifferent. In Hindi they say, chalta hai. Kya farak padta hai, you know, they will say. Or there are others who are scared of this question, who are averse to anybody who is trying to change their view. So Devamrit Maharaj was quoting this famous comedian, Jimmy Durante. Jimmy Durante made a statement. He says, my mind is made up. My mind is already made up. Don't try to confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up. Don't try to confuse me with facts. So that's the mentality of, you know, so many people. For example, we were doing a program in one of the, you know, what is this site? Western Suburbs? Yeah, Western Suburbs. The other day. So there's one person who attended the lecture. He said that, I like the lecture so much. And I'm so convinced that whatever Bhagavad Gita says is true. However, I'm not going to come for the program from next time. So the person asked, why? If you're so convinced. He says, because I fear that if I keep coming for these programs, I'll lose my material attachments. This is his problem. I fear that I'll give up alcohol. I fear that I'll stop enjoying material nature. I fear that I'll become very regulated
in my life.
What about this view now? So this is almost similar to, I have made up my mind. Don't try to confuse me with the facts. It's almost like that. You're convinced, but you don't want to be convinced. So Srila Prabhupada therefore said, you can only awaken a person who is genuinely asleep. We cannot awaken a person who is pretending to be asleep. So we can't do anything to such people. Just wait. So their material nature will automatically give some slaps, and then hopefully the realization will come that we cannot enjoy this material world eternally. And then they'll come back. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that different planets, the different planetary systems are nothing but they are abodes or residences for different evolution of consciousness. Even in this material world, from common earthly observation, we can find out how people decide their residence based on the consciousness. Don't we choose our residence based on our consciousness? Yes, we do. So, in human life, if you see, human beings also, it is said that there are 8.4 million species, which all of you know. Out of 8.4 million species that inhabit this material world, I think there are 4,000, is that correct? 4,000 human species, right? Out of 8.4. Pardon? 400,000, is it? Are you sure? 400,000. 400,000 are human species in different levels of consciousness. So, if we see on one extreme, we can find the tribes who are practicing cannibalism. That is on one hand. And then gradually, those people who wear a suit and tie and go to office. To those people who are transcendentalists but impersonalists. And to the highest section of society, of human beings, who are devotees and personalists. Okay, so we see a huge spectrum within this. All those 400,000 human species are at different points, evolutions of consciousness, if you put a graph. So, based on this consciousness, people choose their residence. So someone who is very low level of consciousness, he'll say, I'm very happy in the jungle because I can kill the animals, I can cook and eat, I can eat whatever I want. If there are no animals, I'll kill the other fellow who is coming along with me and I'll cook him and eat. So they are very happy in their kshetra. Chapter 13 talks about, Bhagavad Gita talks about kshetra and kshetrajna. Kshetra is our own field of activities, our body and our surroundings. So these people are happy there. Then there are others who are living in the cities, but still in mode of ignorance. For example, near Fitzroy Street that day one auction was going on, and this one of these guys from one of these agencies, Hawking Stewart or whatever agencies are there, he was selling that house. And he said, and it's a wonderful flat, and $500,000, and one, and two, and so on and so forth, these are doing. And then nobody said anything. Come on, guys. Look at the place. Look at the pubs. You can't find this. 1 minute walk to the pub. So different people are being addressed here. And then we were also standing there with them. And the guy is asking, where do you live? I said, here. Same building. Obviously, we didn't take residence there because of the pubs, which are 1 minute or 2 minute away. Of course, Gauranga was there. So it was worth it. Now it is not there. So, different people have different tastes. So he was trying to completely attract them with the pubs in Fitzroy Street. So therefore some people take up residence in some place for that reason. That is mode of ignorance. Other people take up their residences based on mode of passion. For example, many times when I talk to my colleagues, where do you stay? Docklands. Why? Near workplace. I can work late, I can just go, I can come whenever I want. very close to workplace. It's good
for working more.
Okay. So this is called as mode of passion. So the desire to work, work and work. So you make your whole environment conducive to your mode of nature. So on one hand, people in mode of ignorance like to choose residences of proximity to pubs. People in mode of passion choose residence near workplace. Or somebody may choose their residence just because, you know, there's a swimming pool nearby. Okay. For example, many times people come to Albert Park simply because MZAC is nearby. So because there's table tennis, there's basketball, there's so many Commonwealth games are going on. And also because it's prestigious to live in Albert Park. If you tell an office, where do you live? Albert Park. Wow! That's the first, you know. So this is a common reaction. So prestige drives one's place of residence. And then, there are others who have a mode of passion of a different kind. Patriotic about their own nation. For example, it's not uncommon to find someone, they'll come to the country and then say, are there any Telugu or Kannada people staying here? You know, we would like to stay together along with them. Or are there any Indians where they are staying? You know, so, you know, Glen Waverley, yeah, we would also like to go to that suburb. Lots of Indians are there in that suburb. So this is again because of another identity that we have, that I am Indian. So bodily concept of life again. So people choose their residences based on that. So attached to the place of birth. Like someone, Srila Prabhupada once lectured, and then there was one gentleman who was sitting there. Srila Prabhupada said that by performing devotional service, you will get out of the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. And having gone to the spiritual world, you will not come back again. Fantastic. This fellow had a concern. He went to Srila Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, will not come back again to this material world because I am from Jhansi. So this is another, you know, attachment to birthplace. Can I not come back to Jhansi? From this, as if Jhansi was some, you know, place which is beyond all material miseries. You know? So too much attachment. So sometimes people want their abode to be Jhansi only, you know, for 7 lifetimes. So as much as we see how people take up residences within the material world, the same logic is also valid for residences outside the Bhumandal or this earthly planetary systems. So what does the scriptures say? What is the scriptural view of planets outside? So we'll discuss that and conclude. So it is mentioned, again, as most of you know, in Srimad Bhagavatam, that there are two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world. The material world has got two aspects of creation. One is called as the Sarga and the other is called as the Visarga. The primary creation and the secondary creation. The primary creation was done by Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu himself, and the secondary creation was done by Brahma. Just 2 days back, we had this, you know, in Infosys corporate room, you know, we had this meeting of our bank, and I was talking to one person who is from Switzerland. So he was actually, you know, talking to me after the party. There was a presentation, and you know, there was a party after that. He was asking me about, you know, Jagan, can you tell me about who created this world? And I said, where were you, man? No, because it's our favorite talk. I never expected somebody will ask me this question, you know, at that party, you know. And obviously then, you know, I didn't try to unleash everything, but, you know, taking the opportunity, but I just told him that. And before I could start, he was saying, was it Brahma? I was saying, yes, Brahma, yes. Creator. So I said, yes and no. And then when I said no, there are 3 other Indians who came. What? Brahma is the creator. Jagat. What happened? Yes, Brahma is the creator. Then I just told them that it is Sarga and Visarga. Then everyone kept quiet. Because then beyond that, you know, persons who have not read Srimad Bhagavatam wouldn't know. No, it's only Brahma who is the creator for the common man, even in India. So there is primary creation and secondary creation. So Lord Vishnu created when the Lord enters the material universe as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, from his navel comes 14 planetary systems. So Lord has created all the infrastructure, and then Brahma, what is he doing? He is just create, and he has created ingredients also. Earth, water, fire, ether, everything has come from Lord Krishna, from Brahman, from his impersonal manifestation. What Brahmaji is doing is simply giving shape to that in the form of living entities. Human body, animal body, tree body. That's what he does. That is called as Visarga, or the secondary creation. Just like idli, and idli batter is there, which is primary creation. And when I take it and simply pour it in that mold and then eat, that is secondary creation in one sense. My wife has already prepared that. I'm only converting it from one form to the other form. It's like that. So, Sarga and Visarga. So, from his navel comes 14 planetary systems. It is mentioned that the middle planetary system is our planetary system, which is called as Bhulok or Bhumandal. Therefore, in the when you chant the Gayatri, then it is Om Bhuhu, Om Bhuvaha, Om Swaha, Om Mahaha, Om Janaha, Om Tapaha, Om Satyam. So it talks about the planetary systems which are above the earthly planetary systems. So there is Bhuvar Loka, then there is Swar Loka, then there is Mahar Loka, Jana Loka, Tapa Loka, and Satya Loka, which is the highest planetary system in the material universe. And then beyond that is the layer of which separates the spiritual world from the material world. You cross that, you enter the Viraja River, and after the Viraja River, then there is the spiritual world. So all this is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, it is mentioned that even in this particular Bhumandal, there are 7 islands, and we don't know of anything. Even in the earthly planetary systems, we have no information. It is mentioned in the 5th canto that there are 7 islands. Island is called as Dvipa. And the island which we are in is called as, any idea? Jambudvip. That's why it's called Jambudvip. Even sometimes when Vedic yagyas are done in South Indian style, they will say Jambudvipe, Bharadavarshe, Bharadakkande, Mero. No, they will say, no, like that. You hold it like this and then you say, no. Okay. So this is Jambudvip. That's where we are living in. It is a center island. And inside this island, then there are further divisions. It is mentioned there are 9 divisions of within Jambudvip itself. And each division is called as Varsha. V-A-R-S-A. Like that. And the Varsha which we are living in is called as Ilavrita Varsha. And in Ilavrita Varsha, then in one corner of that is the earth planet, and then in that one corner there is, on the earth planet there is Bharatavarsh. So there is so much of this elaborate description that is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is mentioned that even within the Ilavratavarsha, what to speak of Jambudvip? First of all, earthly planetary system. There are so many higher and lower. Even in the earthly planetary system there is Jambudvip. In that Ilavratavarsha, even in this Jambudvip, within Jambudvip, Ilavrata Varsha, it is mentioned that outside of our realm, which is outside of earth, there is so much of material opulence, which is not available on earth, even within the earthly planetary systems. It talks about oceans of mango juice, right? Which we think 10 times before drinking because it's so expensive, drinking mango juice outside, right? But there are oceans of mango juice, it's opulently available outside. You don't have to go to Victoria, South Victoria market and wait for the last lot to come over there to buy it at $1. It's available free. So much opulence is available. And then it also, Srimad Bhagavatam also talks about how the Ganges liver flows into this material world through higher planetary systems. It's an elaborate description. I'll not get into that because we don't have that much time. But it would suffice to know for us that out of the 14 planetary systems, that we are in the earthly planetary systems, the planetary systems which are above us are called as heavenly planetary systems. And the planetary systems which are below us are called as subterranean heavenly planetary systems, not hellish planetary systems necessarily. Though yes, hellish planetary systems are also there, but there are higher heavenly planetary systems and subterranean heavenly planetary systems. Okay. The higher planetary systems are called as Divya Swarga. And the subterranean heavenly planets are called as Bila Swarga. Now you may wonder, what is the difference between the higher planetary systems, which are heavenly, and the lower planetary systems, which are again heavenly? What is the difference? Because heaven is everywhere, that means, right? So the similarity, first, is that all heavenly planetary systems, there is too much of material opulence. Enjoy material life. So if you have lot of pious credits, you can go and enjoy in the higher planetary systems or the lower planetary systems, both ways. The difference is in what kind of pious credits you have. That decides whether you go to the higher planetary systems, higher heavenly planets, or the lower subterranean heavenly planets. It is mentioned that if a person has bhakti, he has some idea of godhood, and he wants to, he's pious by nature from a spiritual point of view, but he has got a desire to enjoy the material world and he has got merits, then he goes to the higher heavenly planetary systems. But if a person has simply done lot, let's say for example, lot of philanthropic work, nice person who wants to enjoy life but doesn't have anything to do with God. There are so many people. You can't say just because somebody is atheistic, that person is not good in society. You can't say like that. They may be operating in mode of goodness. They may still be atheists, right? Or not so favorable towards God. So for such persons are rewarded by placing them in subterranean heavenly planetary systems. And then people who are completely violating the laws of the constitution, okay, who are don't have any pious credits, only full accumulation of sins, those people are placed in hellish planetary systems, which is called as Naraka Loka. So there is Bhumandal, there is Bhu, Swar, till Satyaloka upwards, and if you go down, there are again those planets. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Mahatal, Rasatal, Talatal, and Patal. These are the subterranean heavenly planetary systems. And below Patal, then, what is there? Below Patal, there is hellish planetary systems. But between that subterranean heavenly planets and the hellish planets, there is a small world which is called as Pitrulok. Pitrulok is where Lord Yamaraj resides. Pitrulok is like a court, and the hellish planetary systems is like the jail. Court is a place where a judgment is given, and jail is a place where you undergo the result of that judgment, whatever outcome that they give, then you have to go there. So Pitrulok is the court. So when person leaves the body, goes to Pitrulok, gets his judgment and then gets his allocation. Right? So all this description is nicely given. The problem in Bila Swarga, in the subterranean heavenly planets, it is said the material opulence in subterranean heavenly planets is higher than the material opulence which is in the heavenly planets above. So is it good or bad? It's worse for a devotee, for a seeker, for a person who has to get liberated, it's worse. Because too much material opulence without piety is a very disastrous recipe for permanently staying in the material world. At least in the higher planetary system, there is some concept of Godhood. There is material opulence, but at least people are pious. They accept Lord Krishna. Whereas below, there is nothing like that. And there's too much of material opulence. So you don't even have misery which will turn you to God. So it's a very disastrous situation going down there to these planetary systems. And then what to speak of the hellish planetary systems? Hellish planetary systems in one sense are good, better than subterranean and heavenly planets, because at least everything is so bad about it. There's nothing very good in the hellish planetary systems. It is mentioned there are 28 hellish planetary systems called as Tamishra, Andhatamishra, Raurava, Maharaurava, Kumbhipaka, and so on and so forth. And every planetary system is for one or a combination of types of sins. For example, if you run away with somebody's wife, then you are going to one planetary system. If you kill an animal, then you are going to another hellish planetary system. If you cheat someone of money, then you go somewhere else. If you are too much addicted to wine, then you go somewhere else. Right? If you disrespect a guest, you go somewhere else. If you disrespect elders, you go somewhere else. And the types of punishments are also different. One type of punishment is your eyes are plucked out. The animals which you killed and you ate, now that animal is coming back. Okay, where were you? It's my turn now. So that's what is going on there. or you are dipped, there are, it is mentioned, there are oceans of stool, blood and pus and urine and air. How does that sound? No. So that's the kind of punishment people get. So once you go there, you don't want to come back there again, right? So then people go either upwards and enjoy and come back to Karma Bhumi, which is Bhulok, or people go there and exhaust their punishment and again come back to the Bhulok to start karma afresh. But the conclusion of all these sections, why are we discussing all this? Not because, you know, we are trying to either go up or down or whatever. It is because the conclusion is Bharata Bhumite Haila Manushya Janma Yara Janma Sarthaka Kai Kara Para Upakar. Which means this, we are very fortunate that we are in earthly planetary systems where specifically in Bharata Bhumi, Lord specifically has given all His mercy. Various incarnations have descended, various saintly persons have come. They are disseminating this knowledge to us of not only the metaphysics involved around the planetary systems, but also they are giving us information on how to escape. They are giving us the easy process of escaping the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So in that context, a devotee has got two responsibilities. One is Janma Sarthaka Kari and other is Kara Para Upakar, which means perfect our own life with this knowledge and also go out and preach. So when we go out and preach, then obviously if we explain these metaphysics to people rather than simply saying chant, sometimes people are not very simple minded. They want some more logic, they want some more information around the universe. So then we can, if we have this knowledge, then it is easy for us to give them that knowledge. So in that context, it is important. However, for a devotee, it is, even if a devotee doesn't know what are the 28 hellish planets or how many planetary systems are above and below, it doesn't matter. That's why Srila Prabhupada said, chant and be happy and go back to Godhead. We don't have to get into all these complications, but they are relevant from a preaching point of view for us. And Vidura is asking these questions to Maitreya Muni, and through that conversation, all of us in this room are getting benefited. I'll stop here and ask if there are any questions or comments. I'll first humbly admit that I cannot counteract. Okay. What I can do is to repeat what Srila Prabhupada said. It is very difficult for us to counteract because there are two views in the world about man having gone to the moon. One says that man never went to the moon. It was a ploy by America to get one-upmanship during the Cold War. And it is said that the entire thing was shot in the deserts of Arizona. And I'm not surprised by that because I lived in Arizona. It's quite possible to shoot something there because there is no mankind. Okay. Arizona is such a place where, and I was living in a specific place, Phoenix. So outside of that, it's all desert, 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 desert. So when I went to Los Angeles, I realized, wow, back to mankind now. You know, like that. So, but Arizona is like that. And it's easy. It's not difficult to shoot such a thing, to call an Arizona desert as a moon. So it's not. However, can I conclusively say so? I don't know. But do I have faith in what Srila Prabhupada said? Yes. Because Srila Prabhupada said it is not possible for man to go to do astral travel by material means. Okay. The reason I am convinced that man did not go, this is my personal view, okay, and I am not asking anyone to adopt this view, is because if man went to the moon in 1968 or 69, why again they have not gone to the moon? So that's a simple question. But again, one more thing. After having gone to the moon, they have brought some rocks, which is worth billions of dollars of taxpayers' money. You get a rock from there. And what do you do with that rock? And worst is, if we come to know that the rock was from Arizona. So there are so many ifs and buts around that. The Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita clearly say, in fact it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, it is demonic to think that you can attain the heavenly planets through astral travel. It is mentioned the only way you can do it is through pious credits, through karma. Through your karma, we can get bodies by which we can do such travel. If we think that with material arrangement we can do so, then we are just fooling ourselves. It's like those astronauts who went to space and then they came back and said that there is no God. And when they are, the school children asked them, how come? They said, we went up there, it is all dark up there, we couldn't see anyone, you know. So there is no God. No? So a tiny speck of dust, again I'm coming back to that, a tiny speck of dust which is Earth, which is floating in the, you know, cosmos, and then you are just on the few yards away on the surface of the dust, and then you are concluding that there is nothing out there. No, it's ridiculous. So my personal view is that I would go with what Srila Prabhupada said, although, you know, it's up to individuals to decide what, do they want to believe the scientists or do they want to believe the saintly persons. And even if they manage to go to the moon, so what? So what? Does it conclude something? How is that relevant to the pursuit of spiritual life? Even if we go to the moon, are we escaping the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death simply because we landed on the moon? Right? It's called as the sea of tranquility. Whereas Bhagavad Gita says there is no tranquility in the material world anyway. No. It is what? Dukhalayam ashashvatam. So where is tranquility in the material universe? So that's my view. I don't know whether I answered or not. So we have to understand from the scriptures. Shastra Chakshu. That's the only way we can understand higher things. Not by scientific speculation. Or simply accepting the word of some country because they are materially advanced. Anything else? What I've understood from the senior devotees and whatever scriptures that we have read so far is that the moment one takes initiation from a spiritual master, then one's quota of sin is finished. That's what initiation is all about. The spiritual master absolves us, in one sense, of all our sins in the fire of the initiation yajna. So your papam or pap or sin stops there. After that, whatever comes to us is because of aparad. For example, I was reading a book by one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, Dr. OBL Kapoor, Adi Keshav. It's called Saints of Braj. I saw this book in the backside of Back to Godhead magazine. And I was reading this book. It is mentioned that in Vrindavan, there is a sage who is sitting inside a cave and meditating. And as he is meditating, a dog enters that cave. And because this saintly person is a highly advanced Vaishnava, he starts chatting with the dog in Vrindavan. These are all incidents which have happened in the last few years in Vrindavan. It's not something I'm talking 500 years back or no. It's all recent incidents. So it is mentioned there that this dog tells him that I have got this birth as a dog. Usually, when do you get birth as a dog? Usually, when do you get birth as a dog? In the normal material world, when a person has got a consciousness of a dog and eats what a dog eats. Right? If you consume meat, then that's what we get. Right? So first is because you gave harassment to a dog, the dog suffered pain because you killed it and ate it. Right? Then you have to go to that Kumbhi Paka or whatever, hellish planetary system, one of the 28 planetary systems, and then you have to suffer. But only because of punishment, one is, yes, in one sense your sins, you have atoned for your sins through that punishment. But real atonement, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, is only when the consciousness, when the desire to sin goes away. Just because a person is put in jail for rape and murder doesn't mean his desire to rape and murder has gone away. It means that yes, he's got a punishment, but desires are still existence. So what happens? Because the desire is still there to eat what a dog eats, you get the birth in animal species even after going to the hellish planetary systems, and then you evolve 8.4 million till you come to human species. Now let us look at this devotee this personality who was there in front of the saintly person with the body of a dog. So this dog is telling the saintly person, actually I was a pujari in Madan Mohan temple nearby. Right? One day I was very hungry. I saw some rasgulla, something was there. I ate bhoga from the Lord's plate even before it was offered in the altar, and that's why I had to get this lifetime. Okay. Now, if you compare that dog with this dog, is it not different? So if the Lord decides, he can place a devotee anywhere. Bali Maharaj was also placed in the subterranean heavenly planets. Right? If he wants, he can place the devotee anywhere. However, the difference is, for the person who is not a devotee, he is just exhausting his sins. And he is still in the karmic cycle. Whereas a devotee, though a devotee may lose a human form of life. For example, you know, Jananand Maharaj has written a very nice book called as Animals in Krishna Consciousness. So which means what? They were devotees in the past lifetime, but because of some apradha, they have to go through animal life. What to speak of, you know, ordinary devotees. Even Bharat Maharaj, who was in the platform of Bhava Bhakti, which is this, before Prema Bhakti comes, Bhava Bhakti. Nishta, Asakti, Ruchi, Bhava and Prema. From Bhava Bhakti, he fell down to animal species. But that animal species is not akin to this animal species. So therefore, with the Lord's interference, answering your question, Mataji, the Lord's interference means that one can go anywhere. One can get an animal form, or one can go to Swarga or to Apavarga. But the only difference is, for a devotee, Swarga, Apavarga, Narakeshu, Api Tulyata Darshanam. A devotee is not bewildered by what body he gets or which planet he attains, because all that the devotee is interested in is devotional service to the Lord in any form of life. That even Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe, in one of his poems, he says, "Let me be born as a dog or something like that." Right? As long as I am your servant, any species of life is okay. So devotees are not worried about that. Is it okay, Madhuri? Mentioned Yudhishthira went there. But it was also mentioned that it was an illusory experience given to them.
So
I can't remember that past time vividly, but yeah. They were not relegated to hell because of their karma. They were not relegated to hell because of their karma.
So why did that happen?
I can't remember that past time. Anyone remember, sir? Based on Lord's request. Then what is that?
My mind is telling me that you just hesitating to lie.
So oh, yeah. Correct.
That's true.
Correct. He gave more predominance to dharma over Lord Krishna's instruction. Yeah. I remember, but it's all very vague in my mind. I heard this lecture, but I can tell you offline.
Yeah.
I'll hear the class again. One of my god brothers, Govind Prabhu, he has given a class on that particular section, so I'll hear that again. I forgot what he said in the class. Kali Yuga memory. Sorry about that.
Actually, gambling also was thickness. Actually, he believed the dharma was the main thing. The gambling also is done because gambling is thickness.
Yeah, but again, the whole gambling also was, everything happened by Lord Krishna's desire only, you know, over there. So, we cannot call, you know, Yudhishthira as the great gambler or something. No.
His wife also.
Pardon? All that is true, all that is true, but there is difference between tattva and leela. Okay, so we have to understand that sometimes the Lord uses his most intimate disciples or devotees to do things which are contrary to dharma. So therefore, to place them in the adharmic mold, okay, would be, you know, not correct. Okay, so we have to. One is the pastime which is happening, and one is the moral facts that come out of that pastime. But then higher than morality is spirituality, the absolute truth. So we have to see from the, not only from the point of view of morality, we have to see from the point of view of spiritual tattva, and ultimately from the point of view of spiritual leela. So spiritual leela is the highest reality. So therefore,
yes,
it needs explanation by a devotee to understand this.
Some bad things, they do some wise things. So that means
perpetually there. They'll get orientation of different planets. They are the best person to consult, you know, on how hellish planet looks like. They'll know all the 28.
Yes, so
that's what I understand.
They first go through, for example, numerous hellish planets, and then they go to heavenly planets. So, well, what happens?
What happens is they're exhausting their karma, that's all. They'll exhaust all their karma. So we have to understand. I'll just go for 2 more minutes because I'll have 9 o'clock. I think we'll have to stop. So I'll explain very briefly. If you read a book called as Nectar of Devotion, you know, you will understand that. Have you had exposure to that book by any chance? Yeah, you have read about Papam, Bijam, Kutam. You have read about all these things. Yeah, if you read that, it says that its sin also leads to desire to sin. Okay, so. For sin, there is punishment, which goes off. But the desire to sin is still there. Okay, so the desire to sin still means that you will come back to sin. And you can only come out of that cycle through the process of bhakti, which destroys the seed of sinful desire.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we have to apply those principles. Maybe we can have a chat offline, you know, after the class, so that I end at 9. I should actually end it at 8:40. Can I answer your question offline? Yeah, after the class. Okay. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shila Prabhupada ki.